I went to Thailand during my gap year, and when I was there, me and the team I was with, we used to love going to these night markets, and we used to love going there because the things you could buy were absolutely amazing. Whatever you wanted, you could get, and you could pretty much get it for nothing. If you wanted a brand new Armani suit, you could get it for nothing. If you wanted the latest Nike trainers, then you could get them for nothing. And I remember buying myself a Rolex watch and just thinking when I was wearing this watch that I was just like the bee's knees and I looked incredible. But the problem was, after a few weeks, well, the strap, it started to loosen, and the minute hand, it just stopped going round. And actually, after no time at all, my Rolex watch was broken. Because even though this watch had the Rolex logo on it, it was not authentic. It was a counterfeit model. And as we've read James's letter, we realize that he cares a lot about what is authentic and what is counterfeit. See, James is passionate about the authentic faith. And we've seen that over the last few weeks, haven't we? We've seen that authentic faith, it is single-minded. That you have to be a doer and not just a hearer of God's word. That you have to have an active religious life even. James wants those who know that Jesus is Lord to live out that knowledge in their lives and to show no partiality. Now James, he comes and he puts the counterfeit faith under the microscope. And he does this by asking a penetrating question. Can a faith that has none of the things James cares about, God cares about, single-mindedness, doers and not just hearers of the word, showing no partiality, can a faith which has none of those things, can that faith save you? Let's look down at verse 14. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? I'm sure warning bells are maybe going off in some of your heads. We've celebrated the Reformation here at St. John's. We know that you are saved by faith alone, thank you very much. Works, they're not going to make you right with God. Hear me right. James is not saying at all that you can earn your salvation, that you can possibly buy your way into heaven. We've already seen in chapter 2, verse 5, that faith is a gift. No, James believes that faith saves. He's simply asking what sort of faith saves. Is it one, a faith without deeds, just words? Or is it two, a faith filled with deeds and words? Well, James, he doesn't really have much time for faith without deeds. And we see that because he's labelled it the counterfeit option. And we find three reasons why this is a counterfeit faith. Well, firstly, a counterfeit faith is useless. In verses 15 to 17, if a brother or a sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. Now the image James gives us here, it's so striking, isn't it? The church is always described as a family. So James here, he is referencing a church. So imagine that someone comes up to you, and this is someone you know from church, someone you'd consider to be a brother or a sister, and they tell you that they are hungry and that they are thirsty. And imagine that all you did in response to this news was just give them empty words. This image James uses, it's so cold. It's even cruel. These words, they're not going to fill up an empty stomach and they're not going to keep anyone warm. They are useless. In the same way, a deedless, workless faith is also useless. All it is meaningless, empty words. Secondly, a counterfeit faith is invisible. When a woman asks, when a man asks a woman to marry her, and she says yes, how do you know that they actually meant the words which they said? When I was in Cardiff studying, two couples I knew got engaged at around the same time. And from the outwardly, it looked like they were both equally in love. They were both equally in love, but one couple got married and the other couple didn't. That's how you know that these couples mean the words that they've said. When they actually go from being engaged to actually being married, when they put their words into practice, when their faith becomes a deed. In the same way, this is how we know if someone has authentic faith. They prove it. Verse 18. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. Counterfeit faith, it is invisible. Like, it can sound really impressive, but actually, in reality, there's nothing there. You cannot see it. It is invisible. Now, when I say invisible, I'm not talking about invisibility like Harry Potter, where he's put this cloak over him and we can't see him anymore, but actually he's really there underneath. No, when I say invisible, I mean invisible, a bit like this invisible table right next to me. When I put a book and rest the book upon it, it proves itself not to be there. Thirdly, counterfeit faith, James tells us, is demonic. Verse 19. You believe that God is one. You do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. You know, in an exam on Christian doctrine, you know who's going to do really well at that exam? Satan. Yeah, he's going to know more about doctrine than I'm going to know. He's going to know more about doctrine than you're going to know. But Satan and his demons, even though they understand, and even though they believe, and even though this belief causes them to shudder, they're not going to be in heaven. They will not be saved, because what they believe, it has not changed them. They know that Jesus is Lord, but they do not live like he is Lord. As James places counterfeit faith under the microscope, we too then are placed under the microscope. I don't know about you, but as I was preparing this talk in James, I found God's words just so cutting. Like, is my faith, is it useless? Is it invisible? Is it demonic? Do I have knowledge but no action? I know Jesus is Lord, but have I let this change me? Have I let this transform me? So how should we apply these words today? Well, first let's listen to them, and then let's let them shake us. Like, do we find ourselves just going along to church and the occasional Bible study? Do we find ourselves just doing these things simply because, well, we just always have, just simply out of this tradition? Well, if we look within and then we find nothing but a statement of faith and no actions to go alongside it, well, then we are like an invisible table that has no use, and we share more in common with a demon than the saints. If you find that reality within yourself, then hear the words of James. A workless faith cannot save you. Well then, what sort of faith does save? If a counterfeit faith is useless, well, James goes on to show us that we need an authentic faith. Please look down with me in verse 20 to 23. Do you want to be shown, you foolish person, that faith apart from works is useless? Was not Abraham, our father, justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active along with his works, and faith was completed by his works. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God and it was counted to him as righteousness, and he was called a friend of God. If you want to be a friend of God, you need to have an authentic faith. And the characteristics of an authentic faith are threefold. Firstly, an authentic faith is obedient. James gives us the example of Abraham. Now, Abraham, he was the great father of the Jewish nation. And God asked him to do something massive. He asked Abraham to sacrifice his son. Monstrous, we think. Well, it's not actually as bad as it sounds. Because Abraham believed God. And he believed that God had the power to raise his son from the dead. So Abraham was willing to do this, to do what God had told him to do. He was obedient. Quick side point. God in his kindness asked Abraham to be willing to do this. But then God gave Abraham a ram to sacrifice instead. So fear not, our God is not into child sacrifice. The point though that James is trying to make by bringing up this story is that Abraham was obedient. Abraham believed and Abraham acted. The two worked together alongside each other. If Abraham had not acted, he would have revealed that he did not believe. But he did act, and thus he is justified and is a friend of God. And he revealed that an authentic faith is made up, it is formed, it is filled even with obedient works. I know a teacher who had a lovely middle class school and a middle class street and went to a lovely middle class church up in Edinburgh. And she decided to move from her wonderful, comfortable life across Edinburgh to a much harder school, to one of the roughest estates in all of Scotland, so she could join a church plant in this rough estate. And she did this because she believed that Jesus Christ is Lord. And she was obedient to that belief. She was obedient to that belief. And she knew that we need to make disciples everywhere. Not just in the middle class environment, but everywhere. And so she went to join this church plant. She packed up and she moved. Because authentic faith is obedient. The next mark of authentic faith is an authentic faith is costly. Secondly, an authentic faith is costly. Please look down at verse 24 and 25. You see that a person is justified by works and not by faith alone. And in the same way, was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? Now we can read verse 24 and it can be a bit confusing, can't it? How are we justified? How are we declared right before God? Is it by works or is it by faith? But remember that James has a different definition of faith than perhaps we're used to. His is a faith which is filled with works, overflowing with action. That is why it cannot and is not faith alone. Because it is a faith that is ram-packed with works. And we see this understanding of faith in the example of Rahab. You see, Rahab's city was about to be invaded by the Israelites. But Rahab had heard about this Israelite God who could split the sea so that his people could walk across on dry land. This Israelite God who had gone around defeating mighty king after mighty king. She'd heard about this God and all that she could do. So when Israelite spies came to her city of Jericho, Rahab welcomed these spies into her house because she believed in this God. Can you imagine that, how costly that would be to welcome spies from the invading army into your home? It would have been a bit like a woman in Nazi Germany inviting Allied spies into her house. But Rahab welcomed these spies in, and thus she counted the cost. Because she believed in the Lord. And she put that belief into practice. I know a doctor who lives in a tiny little flat so that he can give as much of his income away as possible. You see, he believes that Jesus Christ is Lord. So he is willing to count the cost and to give as much of his wealth away as he can so that more people can rejoice in that truth. When I first moved to Edinburgh, I had a flat ready for me, but I couldn't move in for a few weeks. And so this pastor, who I had never met before, let me come and stay in his house. Him and his wife welcomed me in. I had never met them. They believed that Jesus is Lord, and they were willing to put that belief into practice and to show incredible levels of hospitality and kindness. Because authentic faith, it is costly. And the third characteristic of authentic faith, authentic faith, is alive. And we see that in verse 26. For as the body, apart from the spirit, is dead, so also faith, apart from works, is dead. A body with no spirit, no breath, no air, is sadly a dead body. And in the same way, a faith without works, without deeds, is sadly a dead faith. But a body that is filled with air is a body that is filled with life. So a faith that is filled with works is a faith that is filled with life. Authentic faith, it is not a corpse stretched out on the ground, but a living, active, breathing, moving, running body. James has showed us what a counterfeit faith looks like, and he's given us clear examples about what an authentic faith looks like. And thus he helps us answer the questions. And he helps us ask questions of ourselves and our own faith, which helps us answer that ultimate question he gave us in verse 14. Will that faith save you? Will our faith save us? A saving faith is obedient. So do we have an obedient faith? Do we hold on to God's promises? Do we live in the light of what he says? Are his priorities our priorities? A saving faith, it is costly. Are there things in our lives which we're just holding on to too highly? Do we value comfort just too much? Are we willing to count the cost to live out all that we do believe? A saving faith is a living faith. You will feel it like air running through your body. So is your faith up and about and active? Is it moving? To conclude our time in James, I wonder how you've found it. I wonder if you're worried, do I have a counterfeit Rolex of a faith rather than an authentic one? I wonder, are we in danger of walking away tonight just feeling like total failures? Well, can I warmly remind you of a truth that I find so deeply liberating, that the way into the Christian life is also the way of the Christian life. We become Christians when we realize that we are sick, that we are sinful, and that we deserve to be eternally separated from our good God. We become Christians when we realize that Jesus, he has taken our failings and our brokenness upon himself when he died for us on the cross. We become Christians when we believe that Jesus Christ is Lord, and that he alone can make us clean and forgiven and pure, and that he alone can make us children of God. This is the way into the Christian life, but this is also the way of the Christian life. So let us today, let us let God's word cut us to the core of who we are. Let's let his word examine our hearts like a microscope. And if we find guilt, then let's acknowledge it. Let's admit it. But let's not stop there. Instead, let that guilt take us to the cross of Christ and say, I'm sorry that I offered words to my brother when I should have offered food. I'm sorry that my faith has become ritualistic. I'm sorry that I've not been obedient to your voice. I am sorry that I've not been willing to count the cost. Father, will you forgive me of this? And then know that through Jesus' death on the cross, he has forgiven you. And ask God, Father, will you please help me to not live with a counterfeit faith anymore? Will you help me to offer food to my sister when she asks? Will you help me to be obedient to your voice even when I don't want to? Will you help me to count the cost no matter how great it is? Will you, Father, install within me an authentic faith filled and overflowing and bursting with good works? Will you, Father, please give me the wisdom so I can live this out? And to close, before I invite the band back up, I want us to flick our Bibles over to chapter 1, verse 5. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. I'm going to ask the band to come back up, and we are going to sing two more songs together this evening to help us focus our hearts and our minds upon the truths of God and the wonders of eternity.